Chapter 4. Advantages to a Bond.
And that was the end of it, Bavara said, sitting against the wall. Andril could feel her emotions. They sat in the storeroom where they'd fought Taim's men, waiting for Imaren, who claimed he could make Dobser talk. Andril himself had little skill in interrogation. The scent of grain had changed to a rancid stench. It spoiled suddenly sometimes. Bavara had grown quiet, both outside and in, as she'd spoken of the murder of her family by longtime friends.
I still hate them, she said. I can think about my family without pain, but the Dark Friends, I hate them. At least I have some vengeance, as the Dark Ones certainly didn't defend them. They spent all their lives following him, hoping for a place in his new world, only to have the last battle come long after their deaths. I suppose the ones living now won't be any better off. Once we win the last battle, he will have their souls. I hope their punishment is lengthy.
You're so certain we will win? Andril asked.
Of course we will win. It's not a question, Andril. We can't afford to make it one.
He nodded. You're right. Continue.
There's no more to say. Odd to tell the story after all these years. For a long while I couldn't speak of it.
The room fell silent. Dobser hung in his bonds, facing the wall, his ears plugged by Pavara's weaves. The other two were still unconscious. Andril had hit them hard, and he intended to see that they didn't awaken any time soon. Pavara had shielded them, but she couldn't possibly maintain three shields at once if the men tried to break free. Aes Sedai usually used more than one sister to hold one man. Three would be impossible for any single channeler, strong or not. She could tie off those shields, but Taim had set the Ashaman at practicing how to escape a tied-off shield. Yes, best to make certain the other two didn't wake. Useful though it would be just to cut their throats, he didn't have the stomach for it. Instead, he sent a tiny thread of spirit and air to touch each of their eyelids. He had to use a single weave and a weak one, but he managed to touch all of their eyes. If the lids cracked a tiny bit, he'd know. That would have to be enough. Pavara was still thinking about her family. She had been telling the truth. She did hate the Dark Friends. All of them. It was a measured hate, not out of control. But it was still strong after all of these years. He would not have suspected that in this woman who seemed so often to smile. He could sense that she hurt. And oddly, that she felt lonely.
My father killed himself, Andril said, without really intending to.
She looked at him.
My mother pretended it was an accident for years, Andril continued. He did it out in the woods, leaped from a cliff. He'd sat down with her the night before and explained what he was going to do.
She didn't try to stop him? Pavara asked, aghast.
No, Andril said. Only a few years before she found the mother's last embrace. I was able to pry some answers out of her. She was frightened of him. That was shocking to me. He'd always been so gentle. What had changed in those last few years to make her fear him?
Andril turned to Bavara.
She said that he saw things in the shadows. That he'd started to go mad.
Ah.
You asked me why I came to the Black Tower. You wanted to know why I asked to be tested. Well, this thing that I am, it answers a question for me. It tells me who my father was, and why he did what he felt he needed to do. I can see the signs now. Our business did too well. Father could find quarries of stone and veins of metal when nobody else could. Men hired him to find valuable deposits for them. He was the best. Uncannily good. I could see it in him at the end, Pavara. I was only 10, but I remember. The fear in his eyes. I know that fear now.
He hesitated.
My father jumped off that cliff to save his family's lives.
I'm sorry, Bibara said.
Knowing what I am, what he was, helps.
It had started raining again, fat drops hitting the window like pebbles. The door into the shop opened, and Imaren finally peered in. He saw Dobser hanging there and looked relieved. Then he saw the other two and started.
What have you two done?
What needed to be done? Andral said, standing. What took you so long?
I nearly started another confrontation with Kotaran, Imaren said, still staring at the two captive Ashaman. I think our time is short, Andral. We didn't let them goad us, but Kotaran seemed annoyed, more so than normal. I don't think they're going to tolerate us much longer.
Well, those captives put us on a countdown anyway, Pivara said, moving Dobser over to make room for Imaren. You really think you can make this man talk? I've tried interrogating dark friends before. They can be tough to crack.
Ah, Imaren said.
But this is not a dark friend.
This is Dobser.
I don't think it's really him,
Andral said, studying the man floating in his bonds.
I can't accept that someone can be made to serve the Dark One.
He could sense Pivara's disagreement. She really did think that was how it happened. Anyone who could channel could be turned, she'd explained. The old texts spoke of it. The idea made Andral want to sick up. Forcing someone to be evil? That shouldn't be possible. Fate moved people about, put them in terrible positions, cost them their lives, sometimes their sanity. But the choice to serve the Dark One or the Light? Surely that one choice could not be taken from a person. The shadow he saw behind Dobser's eyes was enough proof for Andral. The man he'd known was gone, killed. And something else, something evil, had been put into his body. A new soul. It had to be that.
Whatever he is, Pivara said, I'm still skeptical that you can force him to speak.
The best persuasions, Imaren said, hands clasped behind his back, are those that aren't forced. Pivara Sedai, if you would be so kind as to remove the weaves blocking his ears so that he can start to hear, but only remove them in the most minor way, as if the weave has been tied off and is failing. I want him to overhear what I'm about to say.
She complied. At least Andral assumed she did. Being double-bonded didn't mean they could see one another's weaves. He could feel her anxiety, however. She was thinking of dark friends she'd interrogated, and was wishing for something. A tool she'd used against them?
I do think we can hide at my estates, Imaren said in a haughty voice.
Andral blinked. The man held himself taller, more proudly, more authoritatively. His voice became powerful, dismissive. Just like that, he had become a nobleman.
No one will think to look for us there, Imaren continued. I will accept you as my associates, and the lesser among you, young Evan, for instance, can enter my employ as servants. If we play our hand correctly, we can build up a rival Black Tower.
I don't know how wise that would be, Andral said, playing along.
Silence, Imaren said. I will ask your opinion when it is required. Aes Sedai, the only way we will rival the White and Black Towers is if we create a place where male and female channelers work together. A gray tower, if you will.
It is an interesting proposal.
It is the only thing that makes sense, Imaren said, then turned to their captive. He cannot hear what we say?
No,
Pivara said.
Release him, then. I would speak to him.
Pivara hesitantly did as instructed. Dobser dropped to the floor, barely catching himself. He stumbled for a moment, unsteady on his feet, then immediately glanced toward the exit. Imaren reached behind his back, pulled something from his belt, and tossed it to the floor. A small sack. It clinked as it hit.
Master Dobser, Imaren said.
What's this?
Dobser asked, tentatively crouching down, taking the sack.
He peeked into it, and his eyes widened noticeably.
"Payment,"
Imaran said. Dobser narrowed his eyes.
"To do what?"
"You mistake me, Master Dobser," Imaran said. "I'm not asking you to do anything. I'm paying you in apology. I sent Andril here to request your aid, and he seems to have overstepped the bounds of his instructions. I merely wish to speak with you. I did not intend to see you wrapped up in air and tormented."
Dobser glanced about himself, suspicious.
"Where'd you find money like this, Imaran? What makes you think you can start giving orders? You're a soldier."
He looked at the pouch's contents again.
"I see that we understand each other," Imaran said, smiling. "You'll maintain my front for me, then?"
Dobser
frowned. He looked at Wellen and Leems, lying unconscious on the floor.
"Yes," Imaran said. "That is going to be a problem, isn't it? You don't suppose we could just give Andril to Taim and blame him for this?"
"Andril?" Dobser said, snorting. "A page boy? Taking down Tuashimon? Nobody would believe it. Nobody."
"A valid point, Master Dobser," Imaran said.
"Just give him the Aes Sedai," Dobser said, jerking a finger toward her.
"Alas, I have need of her. A mess this is, a pure mess."
"Well," Dobser said, "maybe I could talk to the Mahale for you. You know, straighten it out."
"That would be much appreciated," Imaran said,
taking a chair from beside the wall and setting it down, then placing another before it. He sat, waving for Dobser to sit down.
"Andril, make yourself useful. Find something for Master Dobser and me to drink. Tea. You like sugar?"
"No,"
Dobser said.
"Actually, I heard there was wine round here somewhere."
"Wine, Andril,"
Imaran said, snapping his fingers.
Well,
Andril thought, best to play the part. He bowed, shooting Dobser a calculated glare, then fetched some cups and wine from the storeroom. When he returned, Dobser and Imaran were chatting amicably.
"I understand," Imaran said. "I have had such trouble finding proper help inside the Black Tower. You see, the need to preserve my identity is imperative."
"I can see that, my lord," Dobser said. "Why, if anyone else knew a High Lord of Tyr was among our ranks, there'd be no end to the bootlicking. That I can tell you. And the Mahale, well, he wouldn't like someone with so much authority being here. No, not at all."
"You see why I had to maintain my distance," Imaran explained, holding out a hand and accepting a cup of wine as Andril poured it.
A High Lord of Tyr? Andril thought, amused. Dobser seemed to be drinking it in as he did strong liquor.
"And we all thought you were fawning over Loghain because you were stupid," Dobser said.
"Alas, the lot I've been given. Taim would see through me in a moment if I were to spend too much time around him. So I was forced to go with Loghain. He and that dragon fellow, both are obviously farmers and wouldn't recognize a highborn man."
"I'll say, my lord," Dobser said. "I was suspicious."
"As I thought," Imaran said, taking a sip of the wine. "To prove it's not poisoned," he explained, before passing the cup to Dobser.
"It's all right, my lord," Dobser said. "I trust you."
He gulped down the wine.
"If you can't trust a High Lord himself, who can you trust, right?"
"Quite right," Imaran said.
"I can tell you this,"
Dobser said, holding out his cup and wagging it for Andril to refill.
"You'll need to find a better way of keeping away from Taim. Following Loghain won't work anymore."
Imaran took a long, contemplative sip from his cup of wine.
"Taim has him. I see. I did guess it would be so. Wellen and the others showing up tells the tale."
"Yeah,"
Dobser said, letting Andril refill his cup again.
"Loghain is a strong one, though. Takes a lot of work to turn a man like him. Willpower, you know. It will be a day or two to turn him.
Anyway, you might as well come out to Taim, explain what you're up to. He'll understand, and he keeps saying men are more useful to him if he doesn't have to turn them. Don't know why. No choice but to turn Loghain, though. Awful process.
Dobser shivered. I'll go and speak with him then, Master Dobser. Would you vouch for me by chance? I'll see you paid for the effort.
Sure, sure, Dobser said. Why not?
He downed his wine, then lurched to his feet.
He'll be checking on Loghain. Always does this time of night.
And that would be where, Imaran said.
The hidden rooms, Dobser said. In the foundations we're building. You know, the eastern section, where the collapse made all of that extra digging? That was no collapse, just an excuse for covering up extra work being done. And...
Dobser hesitated.
And that's enough, Pivara said, tying the man up in air again and stopping his ears.
She folded her arms, looking at Imaran.
I'm impressed.
Imaran spread his hands apart in a gesture of humility.
I have always had a talent for making men feel at ease. In truth, I didn't suggest picking Dobser because I thought he'd be easy to bribe. I picked him because of his, well, understated powers of cognitive expression.
Turning someone to the shadow doesn't make him any less stupid, Andril said. But if you could do this, why do we have to jump him in the first place?
It's a matter of controlling the situation, Andril, Imaran said. A man like Dobser mustn't be confronted in his element, surrounded by friends with more wits than he. We had to scare him, make him writhe, then offer him a way to wiggle out.
Imaran hesitated, glancing at Dobser.
Besides, I don't think we wanted to risk him going to Taim, which he very well might have done if I'd approached him in private without the threat of violence.
And now? Pivara asked.
Now, Andril said, we douse these three with something that will keep them sleeping until Beltane. We gather Nalam, Candler, Evan, and Jonath. We wait for Taim to finish his inspection of Loghain. We break in, rescue him, and seize the tower back from the shadow.
They stood in silence for a moment, the room lit only by the single flickering lamp. Rain sprayed the window.
Well, Pivara said, so long as it's not a difficult task you propose in Andral.
Rand opened his eyes to the dream, somewhat surprised to find that he had fallen asleep. Avienda had finally let him doze. In truth, she was probably letting herself doze as well. She'd seemed as tired as he had. More, perhaps. He climbed to his feet in the meadow of dead grass. He had been able to sense her concern not only through the bond, but in the way she had held him. Avienda was a fighter, a warrior, but even a warrior needed something to hold on to once in a while. Light knew that he did. He looked about. This didn't feel like Tel-Arun-Riad. Not completely. The dead field extended into the distance on all sides, presumably into infinity. This wasn't the true world of dreams. It was a dream shard, a world created by a powerful dreamer or dreamwalker. Rand began walking, feet crunching on dead leaves, though there were no trees. He could probably have sent himself back to his own dreams. Though he had never been as good as many of the Forsaken at walking dreams, he could manage that much. Curiosity drove him forward. I shouldn't be here, he thought. I set wards. How had he come to this place and who had created it? He had a suspicion. There was one person who had often made use of dream shards. Rand felt a presence nearby. He continued walking, not turning, but knew that someone was now walking beside him.
Elan, Rand said. Luz Theron.
Elan still wore his newest body, the tall, handsome man who wore red and black.
It dies, and the dust will soon rule. The dust, then nothing.
How did you pass my wards?
I don't know, Moradin said. I knew that if I created this place, you would join me in it.
You can't keep away from me. The pattern won't allow it. We are drawn together, you and I, time after time after time.
Two ships moored on the same beach, beating against one another with each new tide.
Poetic, Rand said.
You've finally let me Erin off her leash, I've seen.
Moradin stopped, and Rand paused, looking at him. The man's rage seemed to come off him in waves of heat.
She came to you? Moradin demanded.
Rand said nothing.
Do not pretend that you knew she still lived. You didn't know. You couldn't have known.
Rand kept still. His emotions regarding Lanfear, or whatever she called herself now, were complicated. Luz Theron had despised her, but Rand had known her primarily as Selene, and had been fond of her, until at least she tried to kill Egwene and Avienda. Thinking of her made him think of Moraine, made him hope for things he shouldn't hope for.
If Lanfear still lives, might Moraine as well?
He faced Moradin with calm confidence. Loosing her is pointless now, Rand said. She no longer holds any power over me.
Yes, Moradin said. I believe you. She does not. But I do think she still harbors something of a grievance with the woman you chose.
What is her name again?
The one who calls herself Aiel, but carries weapons?
Rand did not rise to the attempt to rile him.
Mieran hates you now, anyway, Moradin continued. I think she blames you for what happened to her. You should call her Sindane. She has been forbidden to use the name she took upon herself.
Sindane, Rand said, trying out the word. Last chance?
Your master has gained humor, I see. It was not meant to be humorous, Moradin said.
No, I suppose that it was not.
Rand looked at the endless landscape of dead grass and leaves.
It is hard to think that I was so afraid of you during those early days. Did you invade my dreams then, or bring me into one of these dream shards? I was never able to figure it out.
Moradin said nothing.
I remember one time, Rand said, sitting up by the fire surrounded by nightmares that felt like Talayronriad. You would not have been able to pull someone fully into the world of dreams, yet I'm no dreamwalker, able to enter on my own.
Moradin, like many of the Forsaken, had usually entered Talayronriad in the flesh, which was dangerous. Some said that entering in the flesh was an evil thing, that it lost you a part of your humanity. It also made you more powerful. Moradin gave no clue as to what had happened on that night. Rand remembered those days faintly, traveling toward Tyr. He remembered visions in the night, visions of his friends or family that would try to kill him. Moradin, Ishamael, had been pulling him against his will into dreams intersecting Talayronriad.
You were mad during those days, Rand said softly, looking into Moradin's eyes. He could almost see the fires burning there. You're still mad, aren't you? You just have it contained. No one could serve him without being at least a little mad.
Moradin stepped forward.
Taunt as you wish, Luz Theron. The ending dawns. All will be given to the great suffocation of the shadow to be stretched, ripped, strangled.
Rand took a step forward as well, right up to Moradin. They were the same height.
You hate yourself, Rand whispered. I can feel it in you, Aelon. Once you served him for power, now you do it because his victory and an end to all things is the only release you'll ever know. You'd rather not exist than continue to be you. You must know that he will not release you. Not ever. Not you.
Morden sneered.
He'll let me kill you before this ends, Luz Theron. You and the golden-haired one, and the Aiel woman, and the little dark-haired...
You act as if this is a contest between you and me, Elon, Rand interrupted. Morden laughed, throwing his head back.
Of course it is! Haven't you seen that yet? By the blood falls, Luz Theron, it is about us two. Just as in ages past, over and over we fight one another, you and I.
No, Rand said. Not this time. I'm done with you. I have a greater battle to fight.
Don't try to...
Sunlight exploded through the clouds above. There was often no sunlight in the world of dreams, but now it bathed the area around Rand. Morden stumbled back. He looked up at the light, then gazed at Rand and narrowed his eyes.
Don't think. Don't think I will believe your simple tricks, Luz Theron. Wairamon was shaken by what you did to him, but it's not such a difficult thing, holding Sayadin and listening for people's heartbeats to speed up.
Rand exerted his will. The crackling dead leaves began to transform at his feet, turning green again, and shoots of grass broke through the leaves. The green spread from him like spilled paint, and clouds above boiled away. Morden's eyes opened wider. He stumbled, staring at the sky as the clouds retreated. Rand could feel his shock. This was Moradin's dream shard. However, to draw another in, he had had to place it close to Tel Iranriad. Those rules applied. There was something else, too, something about the connection between the two of them. Rand strode forward, lifting his arms out to the sides. Grass sprouted in waves. Red blossoms burst from the ground like a blush upon the land. The storm stilled. The dark clouds burned away by light.
"Tell your master," Rand commanded. "Tell him this fight is not like the others. Tell him I'm tired of minions, that I'm finished with his petty movement of pawns. Tell him that I'm coming for him."
"This is wrong," Moradin said, visibly shaken. "This isn't..."
He looked at Rand for a moment, standing beneath the blazing sun, then vanished. Rand let out a deep breath. The grass died around him, the clouds sprang back, the sunlight faded. Though Morden was gone, holding on to that transformation of the landscape had been difficult. Rand sagged, panting, recovering from the exertion. Here, willing something to be true could make it so. If only things were that simple in the real world. He closed his eyes and sent himself away, to sleep for the short time before he had to rise. Rise and save the world. If he could.
Pavara crouched beside Andral in the rainy night. Her cloak was soaked completely through. She knew a couple of weaves that would have been useful for that, but she didn't dare channel. She and the others would be facing turned Aes Sedai and women of the Black Aja. They could sense it if she channeled. "They're definitely guarding the area," Andral whispered. Ahead of them, the ground broke away into a large sequence of maze-like brickworks and trenches. These were the foundation rooms of what would eventually become the Black Tower proper. If Dobser was right, other rooms had been created within the foundation, hidden chambers already complete that would continue to be secret as the tower itself was constructed. A pair of Taim's Ashaman stood chatting nearby. Though they tried to appear nonchalant, the effect was spoiled by the weather. Who would choose to stand outside on a night like this one? Despite a warm brazier lighting them and a weave of air to send the rain streaming away, their presence was suspicious. "Guards!" Pavara tried sending the thought to Andral directly. It worked. She could feel his surprise as the thought intruded onto his own. Something returned. Fuzzy. We should take advantage. Yes, she sent back. The next thought was too complex, though, so she whispered it. How have you never before noticed that he left the foundation guarded at night? If there really are secret rooms, then the work on them would be done at night as well. Taim set a curfew, Andral whispered. He lets us ignore it only when convenient to him, such as for Welland's return tonight. Besides, this area is dangerous with those pits and trenches. It would be a good enough reason to set guards, except, Pavara said. Taim isn't exactly the type to care if a child or two break their necks poking around. Andral nodded. Pavara and Andral waited in the rain, counting their breaths, until three ribbons of fire flew from the night and struck the guards directly in their heads. The two Ashaman dropped like sacks of grain. Nalam, Emarin, and Jonath had done their work perfectly. Quick channeling. With luck, it either wouldn't be noticed or would be thought the work of Taim's men on guard. Light, Pavara thought. Andral and the others really are weapons. She hadn't stopped to consider that Emarin and the others would lead with lethal attacks. It was completely outside her experience as an Aes Sedai. Aes Sedai didn't even kill false dragons if they could help it. Gentling kills, Andral said, eyes forward. Albeit slowly. Light. Yes, there might be advantages to their bond, but it was also blasted inconvenient. She would have to practice shielding her thoughts. Emarin and the others came in from the darkness, joining Pavara and Andral at the brazier. Canler remained behind, with the other two Rivers lads, ready to lead them from the Black Tower in an escape attempt, if something went wrong tonight. It made sense to leave him, despite his protests. He had a family. They dragged the corpses into the shadows, but left the brazier burning. Someone looking for the guards would see that the light was still there, but the night was so misty and rainy, one would have to draw close to realize that its attendants had vanished. Though he often complained that he didn't know why the others followed him, Andral immediately took charge of this group, sending Nalam and Jonath to watch at the edge of the foundation. Jonath carried his bow, unstrung in the wet night. They were hoping the rain would let up, and that he'd be able to use it when they couldn't risk channeling. Andral, Pavara, and Amarin slid down one of the muddy slopes into the foundation pits that had been dug. Mud splashed over her as she landed, but she was already soaked, and the rain washed away the grime. The foundation was made of stones built up to form walls between rooms and hallways. Down here, this became a labyrinth, with a steady stream of rain falling from above. In the morning, the Ashaman soldiers would be set to drying out the foundation. How do we find the entrance? Pavara sent. Andral knelt, a very small globe of light hovering above his hand. Drops of rain passed through the light, looking like tiny meteorites for a moment as they flashed and vanished. He rested fingers in the pooling water on the ground. He looked up, then pointed. It runs this way, he whispered. It's going somewhere. That is where we'll find Taim. Emarin grunted appreciatively. Andral raised a hand, summoning Jonath and Nalam down into the foundation with them, then led the way, stepping softly. You, quietly, move, well, she sent. Trained as scout, he sent back. In woods, mountains of mist. How many jobs had he done in his life? She had worried about him. A life such as he had led could indicate a dissatisfaction with the world, an impatience. The way he spoke of the Black Tower, though, the passion with which he was willing to fight, that said something different. This wasn't just about a loyalty to Loghain. Yes, Andral and the others respected Loghain, but to them he represented something far greater. a place where men like them were accepted. A life like Andral's could indicate a man who would not commit or be satisfied, but it could also indicate something else. A man who searched. A man who knew that the life he wanted existed out there. He just had to find it. "They teach you to analyze people like that in the White Tower," Andral whispered to her as he stopped beside a doorway and moved his globe of light in, then waved for the others to follow. "No," she sent back, trying to practice this method of communicating to make her thoughts smoother. "Is something a woman picks up after her first century of life." He sent back, tense amusement. They passed into a series of unfinished rooms, none of them roofed, before reaching a section of unworked earth. Some barrels here held pitch, but they had been shifted to the side, and the boards they normally sat upon had been pulled away. A pit opened in the ground here. The water trailed over the lip of the pit and down into darkness. Andral knelt and listened, then nodded to the others before slipping down into it. His splash came a second later. Pavara followed him, dropping only a few feet. The water was cold on her feet, but she was already soaked. Andral hunched, leading the way under an earthen overhang, then stood up on the other side. His little globe of light revealed a tunnel. A trench had been dug here to hold the rainwater. Pavara judged they'd been standing directly above this when they'd taken down the guards. "Dobbs are right," she sent, as the others splashed down behind. "Taim building secret tunnels and chambers." They crossed the trench and continued on. A short distance down the tunnel, they reached an intersection where the earthen walls were shored up like the shafts of a mine. The five of them gathered there, looking in one direction, then another. Two paths. "That way slopes upward," Emarin whispered, pointing left. "Perhaps to another entrance into these tunnels?" "We should probably move deeper," Nalam said. "Don't you think?" "Yes," Andral said, licking his finger and testing the air. "The wind is blowing right. We'll go that way first. Be careful. There will be other guards." The group slipped further down into the tunnels. How long had Taim been working on this complex? It didn't seem terribly extensive. They didn't pass other branchings. But still, it was impressive. Suddenly Andral stopped, and the others pulled to a halt. A grumbling voice echoed up the tunnel, too soft for them to make out the words, accompanied by a flickering light on the walls. Pavara embraced the source and prepared weaves. If she channeled, would someone in the Foundation notice? Andral was obviously hesitant as well. Channeling above to kill the guards had been suspicious enough. If Taim's men down here sensed the one power being used... The figure was approaching, the light illuminating him. A creak came from beside her as Jonath drew his restrung Two Rivers bow. There was barely room in the tunnel for it. He loosed with a snap, the air whistling. The grumbling cut off, and the light fell. The group scrambled forward to find Kotaran down on the ground, eyes staring up glassily, the arrow through his chest. His lantern burned fitfully on the ground beside him. Jonath retrieved his arrow, then wiped it on the dead man's clothing.
"That's why I still carry a bow, you bloody son of a goat."
"Here," Emarin said, pointing at a thick door. "Kotaran was guarding it."
"Prepare yourselves," Andral whispered,
then shoved open the thick wooden door. Beyond, they found a line of crude cells built into the earthen wall, each one little more than a roofed cubbyhole, burrowed into the earth, with a door set in the opening. Pavara peeked in one, which was empty. The cubby didn't have enough room for a man to stand up inside, and the room was unlit. Being locked in those cells would mean being trapped in darkness, squeezed into a space like a grave.
"Light," Nalam said. "Andral, he's in here. It's Loghain."
The others hurried to join him, and Andral picked the door's lock with a surprisingly adept hand. They pulled open the cell door, and Loghain rolled out with a groan. He looked horrible, covered in grime. Once that curling dark hair and strong face might have made him handsome, he looked as weak as a beggar. He coughed, then rose to his knees with Nalam's help. Andral knelt immediately, but not in reverence. He looked Loghain in the eyes as Imaran gave the Ashaman leader his flask for a drink. "Well?" Pavara asked. "It's him," Andral thought, a wave of relief coming through the bond. "It's still him." "They'd have let him go if they'd turned him," Pavara sent back, growing increasingly comfortable with this method of communicating. "Maybe, unless this is a trap." "My Lord Loghain." "Andral." Loghain's voice was raspy. "Jonath. Nalam. And an Aes Sedai?" He inspected Pavara. For a man who had apparently suffered days, perhaps weeks of incarceration, he looked remarkably lucid.
"I remember you. What Aja are you, woman?"
"Does it matter?" she replied.
"Greatly,"
Loghain said, trying to stand. He was too weak, and Nalam had to support him.
"How did you find me?"
"That is a story for once we are safe, my lord," Andral said. He peeked out the doorway. "Let's move. We still have a difficult night ahead of us." "I..." Andral froze, then slammed the door. "What is it?" Pavara asked.
"Channeling," Jonath said. "Powerful."
Yells, muffled by the door and the dirt walls, sounded outside in the hallway.
"Someone found the guards," Imaran said. "My Lord Loghain, can you fight?"
Loghain tried to stand on his own, then sagged again. His face grew determined, but Pavara felt Andral's disappointment. Loghain had been given fork root. Either that or he was simply too tired to channel. Not surprising. Pavara had seen women in better shape than this, who were too worn out to embrace the source.
"Back!"
Andral shouted, stepping to the side of the door, against the earthen wall. The door exploded in a weave of fire and destruction. Pavara didn't wait for the debris to settle. She wove fire and released a column of destruction down the corridor beyond. She knew she was facing dark friends, or worse. The three oaths did not hinder her here. She heard shouts, but something deflected the fire. Immediately a shield tried to slam between her and the source. She fought it off barely and ducked to the side, breathing deeply.
"Whoever it is, they're strong," Pavara said.
A voice called orders distantly, echoing in the tunnels. Jonath knelt down beside her, bow out.
"Light, that's Taim's voice." "We cannot stand here," Loghain said. "Andral, a gateway."
"I'm trying," Andral said.
"Light, I'm trying." "Bah!"
Nalam set Loghain down beside the wall.
"I've been in tighter spots before."
He joined the others at the doorway, flinging weaves down the corridor. Blasts shook the side walls and dirt rained down from the roof above. Pavara jumped in front of the doorway, releasing a weave, then knelt down beside Andral. He stared ahead, not seeing. Face a mask of concentration. She could feel determination and frustration pulsing through the bond. She took his hand.
"You can do it," she whispered.
The doorway erupted, and Jonath fell back, arm burned. The ground trembled. The walls started to break apart. Sweat dripped down the sides of Andral's face. He gritted his teeth, his face going red, eyes opening wide. Smoke poured through the doorway, making Imaran cough as Nalam healed Jonath. Andral yelled, and he neared the top of that wall in his mind. He was almost there. He could... A weave thumped against the room, a ripple in the earth, and the strained roof finally gave out. Earth poured down atop them, and all went black.